Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on every evening during the week, 6:30 to 7. And if I have time and technology permits me, I also do shows on the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. And let me, those of you who are new to me and don't know who I am, this is a complex world with 9 billion people. A lot of people don't know anybody, but I think you should know a little about me of where I'm coming from in this show. Number one, this is not a politically correct show. It is a politically incorrect show. It is a show in which the rubber hits the road. That is to say, we're in for honest discernment, honest discussion, critical thinking, clear thinking, honest thinking, valid thinking. Thinking based on facts and truth. We are aimed to get at the truth and get at the facts. We don't aim at political hype, at media lies, at media falsehoods, or any form of political rhetoric. Those are a waste of intellectual time. They're a waste of spiritual time. They are a damage to the soul to even hear that sort of information, which is not information at all, but it's political rhetoric. I hope you may define it. And so the second prong of this particular discussion about me, and I'm not that great, I assure you. I know that as a Christian. I'm a person who is involved in sin in many respects and has been involved in sin most of my life. I'm not about to hide it. Therefore, I don't think I'm great. However, I do, in fact, am a Christian, and I value the truth of the creeds of the church, Apostles, Athanasian, and Nicene Creed, and I'm a Orthodox Christian, namely I believe in the historical Christian faith, as it's been handed down for the past 2,000 years. I'm not about to change it or vary it. I believe in the full authority of Holy Scripture, because that is Christianity, and that is the historical church, as it has been handed down to us from the saints, from the death of Christ to the present day, where the saints are persecuted in China and Pakistan, wherever Christians are persecuted, which is quite widespread. The third thing is that I'm a writer, and I've written 10 books, and I'm planning more. Some of the books are Christian books, such as Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, and others are legal books, Select Legal Topics, Volume 1 and 2. My first book, Essays in the Christian Worldview, has had very wide sales throughout the world. Particularly the entire University of California college system has bought it, as have many, many community colleges in Louisiana. And there are four major Dutch universities have bought it, as well as German universities and others in New Zealand and Australia. My book, The Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, has been bought by Harvard University of Pennsylvania. My book on the parables, I have placed those parables, those interpretations of the 41 parables on my website and on social media. And I would hope that people would gain benefit from reading those interpretations of the words of the Son of God, the Savior and Redeemer of the world. And I would hope that I'm also placing the sayings of Christ on the website from the four Gospels, again, seeking to shed light and seek valid interpretation of the words of Christ, which are beyond my comprehension. I only attempt to interpret them, I assure you. I don't have the answers. I make an attempt as a mortal, and not the living God, whose words are so valuable that we must very much read them constantly to grasp what this particular person, who is God incarnate, what he is saying. Next, I run two radio shows. These are Christian shows, a podcast show and a blog talk radio show. They're visited by many, many countries all over the world, and including the Saudi Arabia and the Muslim countries. And many Muslim countries have visited my podcast, and that includes China too, atheist, agnostic China. Increasingly, these are the customers who are listening to these shows, non-Christians who are interested in Christian thought, They're intelligent. They're smart. They are willing to listen. In fact, as I said, I had two excellent Muslim guests, a scientist from Istanbul and a novelist, and I have a very great friend in Iran, a young woman who's studying philosophy, and her grasp and knowledge of the Western philosophical thinking is far beyond anything I've ever encountered in the United States. Extremely advanced educational system in Iran. So I was very glad to know that. And many, many Muslims and others from other countries have uploaded my blogs. I have over 550 of them, and they have uploaded these and read them. Again, these are Christian orientation. Not all of them are Christian orientation. I welcome everyone on this show, but many of these blogs and essays are Christian in their orientation. I have an MDiv in theology from Princeton Seminary. I'm very involved in the church. So that's really who I am as a person. As I say, also I've written two journal articles. One is the Syracuse Law Review, which has been bought by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court by many European and American university libraries, and a book and a very important essay which I wrote for Academicus, an Albanian scientific establishment, which published it and also was disseminated to many American and European universities all over the world and many others, and, of course, to the State Department, which bought it. I'm scheduled to give a lecture before representatives of 89 countries in the world law debate very soon, so I hope that you will be able to listen to it and gain some knowledge from it. Now, as I say, this show has many aspects to it. I do speak about English literature sometimes, the great writers such as Milton. Milton is one of my favorites. He's one of the all-time greats. I can never exhaust reading him. And I also like Conrad and Jane Austen and E.M. Foster, who are two of the greatest books that I've ever read, Howard's End and Passage Through India. I also speak about theology on this show and also about political currents. I am a conservative, but I am very concerned about poverty and underclass people as a Christian. Therefore, if a conservative person doesn't address that issue, I part ways with them. Now, I'm going to talk about something that is not going to make very a lot of people very happy hearing this. Let me say, in the modern world, people don't like to hear about the concept of sin. Either they say people's evil actions or immoral actions are environmental or genetic. The concept of sin, which I think is a truth, is, shall we say, glossed over. But the fact of the matter is that there have been 6 or 7 genocides in the past 100 years. And if this is not a world of great evil and sin, then I'm afraid you people here who are parting ways with me on that concept are not taking a look at the world as it is. Moreover, you're not taking a look at the world as at yourselves. And I know that I'm in sin because I know that I lack love in many respects, as I should, for people that I know or do not know. And the main problem and the manifestation of sin is selfishness, self-love, and self-concern, or self. If you don't realize that, then you don't understand that you are in sin. However, let me talk about why this world is such a damn mess. And I think it's quite clear. It's quite clear that people are governed by self-love and selfishness, which is sin. It's obvious. But let's take a look at the Genesis story, the events in the first 2 chapters of Genesis, which say the creation and fall of man. These are seen as myths by some people. They say they're myths or fairy tales. After all, what do we have to do with two people in a garden and a snake that tempts a worm? What do we do with these people? What does that mean? I don't believe that snakes are doing anything to anybody. What do we have to do with this story about a garden? What do we have to do with Eve disobeying and eating of the tree she was not to? So, let's take a look at this story, this so-called myth, and see its profound meaning, which God is trying to tell us in these words. The Genesis story can be seen as an actual event. I think it did happen on a cosmic level. But if it was a historical or factual event, you have to grasp and understand the events described here in Genesis took outside our present cosmic world system. You have the option of taking them as truth and facts, and I take them as truth and facts, because I understand that God is trying to make us understand that something terrible went wrong. Because obviously, there is something terribly wrong in the entire world. Or you can understand these events or stories as an allegory. We can understand them as God coming down to humanity. He's trying to tell us that the world wasn't meant to be evil. It wasn't meant to be bad, but it is. And he's attempting to explain to us how this happened. He's trying to present these events in the first two chapters of Genesis. He's coming down to our understanding in trying to explain to us something that took outside of human history and outside of our world, in a sense. So he's coming down to us, in a sense, trying to explain the reality and why the world is so bad and so evil, and has been for a very long time. Let's take a look at the story in Genesis. We're told in chapter 1 that God makes man in his image. He tells the first parents to be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over all fresh birds and living things. It's clear this creation story envisions a totally different world where there's no violence or hate. You might say, we're told that God makes man in his image and have dominion over living things, fish, birds. And this is clear. This story envisions a totally different world where there is no violence or hate, which is the situation today. And animals, fish, and birds are servants of our first parents. And then there's a second creation story in chapter 2, where God forms man from the dust and breathes life in him. And places them in this garden. This is obviously outside of our understanding of history. And this tree is a knowledge of good and evil and a tree of life. And God commands Adam not to eat of the tree of the good and evil. And he creates a helper for Adam, Eve. And by taking her from one of the ribs of Adam. So there are two creation stories in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. In one, we have the creation of the world and man being made in the image of God. In the second one, we have he breathes life into dust. And there's in the places people in a garden, and there's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and tree of life. And God commands Adam not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and creates Eve. So there's two creation stories. Now, more important, I want to talk about this fall story in chapter 3 and try to make a comprehension of what is God is coming down to us and telling us what happened here. He's telling us something went radically, unavowedly wrong in his creation. He says, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden. And then the serpent says to Eve, it's a serpent who is represented, supposed to be Satan. He says, serpent says to Eve, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden. And the woman replies, God has commanded her not to eat from one tree, that she would die. And the serpent says to the merchant, he fools her. He says, you will not die. And then he says, he appeals, this is the key to this narrative, he appeals to her pride. He says, you will not die. and your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. He's appealing to our fear, the failing, the gross failing of humanity, namely our pride, which I think accurately in this allegory and story is explained to us as the root of evil and sin. So she says the tree is good for food and to delight to her eyes, and she says she gave, and she takes it and eats it and gives it to her husband. So the full story is a very profound and deep story that we all have to reflect on and gain an understanding of. The mistake that Eve made and that we all make as we are tempted through our lives would be she would be like a god. He appealed to her pride in saying, you don't have to see what this god says. You eat of this and you'll be equal to him. You'll be important. That's the great the issue here. She wanted to be important, very important. So Eve gave in to the failing of every person who's ever lived, named that she gave in to the temptation from this serpent and reached the intellectual and emotional conclusion that she was equal to anybody or as good as anybody and not a created creature, not a mortal person with significant limitations. So she reached the wrong conclusion, and that led her to this situation we're in today. And the key to the story here is that she's told by this serpent, who is Satan in the person of the serpent, that she'll be like a god if she eats. And she says, she reaches the conclusion that, wow, that's great. I'm going to be great. And the key to Eve failing at Adam's, that nobody likes to be told what to do, what they have to do, or commanded to do. A child always resists obedience to her parents, even though what they wish the child to obey is for their good. So we are like children in this respect. We resist being told that we're limited and mortal and human. We are not equal and important as we might lead ourselves to think. A child will resist obedience to their pride is a fallacy and mistake to think we're great, we're independent, we're autonomous. Pride is a mistake that our thinking is the right thinking and the good thinking. Pride always fools us as it fools Eve to thinking we are great and greater and better than others. So that's the key here to understanding this very, very important narrative, that Eve gave in to the temptation presented by this serpent, who is Satan, and she was told that you eat of this, you'll be like a god. And within her, she wanted to be that great person, that she wanted to be equal to anybody or as good as anybody. She believed she was equal or as good as anybody. None of us likes to be called we're subject to anyone, that we have to do anything. Nobody likes to be told you're not all that important. You're very limited in reality. Nobody wants to be told that. A child resists obedience to her parents, even though the obedience is good. And pride is the fallacy and mistake to think we are independent and great, that our thinking is the right thinking and the good thinking. So she made this mistake, and it brought us all down to this horrible, evil world we live in. She made a mistake in thinking she could be a god, and she brought us all down. And it was like the mistake was genetically handed to everyone. None of us wishes to know our limitations or concede our failings. No, I don't think we do. Actually, most people don't think they have any limitations. They don't want to place themselves on a limitation basis, or they don't want to tell themselves they are failed persons. None of us is able to be honest, sufficiently honest and forthright to ourselves to say we are not only equal to God, but we're not equal to each other. I'm not going to compose a symphony or write an epic poem or play professional basketball, baseball. The serpent fooled Eve and lured her into thinking she could be something she never would be. And pride, it is the pride that brought us all down. The pride is foolishness and stupidity. She was fooled, and we're all fooled that we have no limitations. We're all fooled that we have no failings. None of us want to say we are not equal to God and we're not equal to each other. I'm not going to compose a symphony, write an epic poem, or play professional basketball. I'm not going to do that, and I know it. But the serpent fooled Eve and lured her into thinking she'd be as good as anybody or better, that she was actually equal to God. And that pride that she gave into is foolishness and stupidity. It's the root of human failings. The pride of C resulted in such a destructive fall that it brought our present evil world into being. All of us share this fool, mother. All of us not only share this fool, but we are fooled about ourselves. I know that the events described here, I think they happened, and that God is trying to communicate us that what happened and how it happened, and he's trying to tell us that something went radically wrong from the beginning.
90.
So I will continue this discussion tomorrow briefly, but I want to point out that Milton, in his great epic poem, Paradise Lost, correctly analyzed the person of Satan in his overwhelming pride. States he would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. I'm going to continue discussing this tomorrow, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And you can find this in chapter 40 of my book, Essays on Faith, Politics, Culture, and Philosophy, where I will again come to a conclusion on this subject and try to grasp and explain what I think is the tremendous depth contained in this Genesis story. It's not a myth. It's not foolishness. It's dead serious. Extremely serious. Serious that has ruined the entire world through this terrible mistake, which we all share in most of our lives. Thinking about ourselves, thinking we're great, and fooling ourselves with our foolish stupidity and pride. Good night. I'll speak again tomorrow.